Blog Talk Radio.
With a second thank you to Adam Siegel for our intro song, this is Rich Sparago, known as CT Mets Fan on Twitter, and you are listening to the Metsian Podcast with John from Metstradamus. We had a little glitch in the episode that just happened where John and I were talking about whether or not players should wear their own uniforms or a standard uniform for the All-Star game. We talked about miking up players. We talked about how we passed the time during the All-Star break. So all that, you know, that was 15 minutes worth of that, and that's in the past now. And now it's time to talk about the Mets. So, John, how are you? How have you filled the last 15 minutes?
I filled the last 15 minutes by wondering if it was actually Rob Manfred that ended our call because we complained about the All-Star uniforms.
That's great. And that's why you're a great follow on Twitter, folks, because if you're not following Metrodonis on Twitter, not only do you get, and I mean this in all candor, not only do you get excellent baseball insight and commentary during the games, you get humor, and we need both. Especially, you need a lot of humor when you watch the first half of the Mets season. Let's talk about that, John. I'm going to be trite and start with the question that if the last time you were on, by the way, was March 26th, right before the season started. So if I told you that night, like after we got off the air, and I told you that night, hey, John, you know what? The Mets are going to start out, 42-48. What would you have said?
I'm tempted to say I wouldn't have believed you. But knowing that this is the Mets we're talking about, if you told me that, I would have been disappointed. And but then I would have realized, you know what? It just goes along the storytelling of this franchise. So I wouldn't have believed it, but then I would have believed it because things happen. It's the Mets.
Amen. So let's diagnose, right? You know, in baseball, it's like in football, you have special teams, offense, defense. Baseball, we can look at it the same way. We can look at starting pitching, we can look at the bullpen. We can look at offense. Defense is, you know, maybe we can look at that too. So let's start to pick apart where this really went wrong. And so I think we know the answer is the flat answer, like that wasn't good or that wasn't good in the first half. But let's talk about the whys behind it and should we have seen it coming. So let's start with starting pitching. Let's start there. This is a team that was predicated, you know, it was predicated the build was on the starting pitching. Scherzer, Verlander, you know, 5 Cy Youngs, I believe, between the two of them, or maybe 6, not sure. And they were supposed to be up front of the rotation, you know, then followed by Quintana and all, you know, we know the rest of the story, and Carrasco and so on. So, John, looking at the starting pitching, give me an honest assessment of it, and then also please give me, in the back of your mind, did you think this was a possibility, that things could have gone wrong?
I did think it was a possibility only because you've got 2 aging pitchers at the front end of the rotation. I didn't think it was a probability, but I thought, yeah, it definitely could happen because when guys get old in baseball, they get old quick, especially if you maintain a level of success deep into your career, especially with Verlander. You know, Verlander had that season last year where he won the Cy Young. I don't think anybody expected that he was going to duplicate that season at age 40, but I don't think anybody could have seen an injury to knock him out the first month of the season and then having him take his time to get his footing and then basically becoming a pitcher who will throw 5 shutout innings but will throw 99 pitches in the process and then have to cede to the bullpen. And with Scherzer, I think that surprises me a little bit more because we all know the competitiveness that Max has in him. We know that he would do anything to change his style, change his workout habits so that he could stay ahead of the curve. And if anything, I think we thought that Max was going to take these new pitch clock rules and make them work for him, whereas it's kind of been the opposite. It's been the opposite with the older guys in terms of dealing with that pitch clock, especially with Scherzer and especially with Carlos Carrasco. So, yeah, I did think it was a possibility that this could happen. What I didn't expect, honestly, was the complete collapse of guys like Tyler McGill and David Peterson. And I think that's hurt the Mets as much as the top two guys not performing to form. When they needed that depth when Quintana went out, and they needed those guys to step up when Carrasco reverted to his 2021 form of giving up a ton of runs in the first inning and not responding to the pitch clock. Those were the guys that they needed to step up and be those depth options. And not only were they subpar, I think the Mets could have dealt with subpar, but they've been at points terrible, especially Peterson. But McGill also had to be sent to the minors as well. So I think that that was the one that really – I think that was the gut punch, that they couldn't rely on their younger pitchers to take that mantle and take that next step in their careers, or at least maintain what they've done. Now, McGill, you could kind of see, he had the injury last year, so he was a little bit more of a question mark. And Peterson did kind of fade at the end of last year as well. But for them to bomb as much as they did, I think it's as much a disappointment as not more than Scherzer and Verlander not performing to their level another year into their late 30s and age 40.
No, I think that's really good analysis, and I saw that. My concern going in, I think we probably talked about it on March 26th, last time you were on, is, look, everything looked good. A lot of Cy Young's at the top of that rotation, but a lot of age, too. And you had to go into that eyes wide open. The Mets did, and I don't believe they did anything wrong by bringing Scherzer and Verlander. They had to get starting pitching. It's devoid in the minor league system. You don't have starting pitching there. So they had to do what they had to do. And the way the options were expensive, aging veterans. And they did that. You kind of roll the dice with that. And I don't want to say it came up snake eyes because Verlander's had some good games. Scherzer's had some good games. But it's been underwhelming, to say the least. Sam has joined us. Sam, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. I think this is a good place for me to insert myself. Thank you for all of you for listening. I apologize that we had a little technical difficulties with the segue over here, but I think that I hadn't thought about the Tyler McGill, David Peterson side of things, but I still think one way or another the Scherzer-Verlander part plays more of a role, and I will use this past weekend as an example. Now, mind you, I don't know what the Mets could have necessarily done Saturday because just Blake Snell was just so incredible, and it was just one of those games. Verlander gave up a lot of runs early, and Scherzer was kind of following suit with that three-run give up early on as well. It's just that he settled in but then didn't, and Verlander did. But I think that that's a perfect example of what the biggest problem is, that the two people at the front of the rotation have, and like you I'm not going to repeat everything you said, Rich. Like you said, maybe they didn't come up snake eyes, but it was you were playing craps with the entire thing, one way or another. I think you saw the momentum that the Mets were gaining. And then, unfortunately, the two members of the rotation that are supposed to be the veteran anchors of it ended up just not following suit within that incredible stretch that the Mets were going under. So I see what you're saying, John, that, and it's funny because we're striving we're struggling for young pitching, and we're really trying to grasp at everything we have, and the promise that we have had when it comes to younger pitching just has not been able to settle in like us Mets fans and the Mets organization have wanted them to during these last couple of years. But I still think when you look at the lack of momentum the Mets have been unable to achieve this season, I think you still have to look to those two, especially like if you think about Max alone, because Verlander, it's just kind of like a separate, even though you kind of group them together, like people are not, because of the history that Max now has with this team, people are not looking at Verlander in the same way with as much vitriol as they currently are looking at Max. And, you know, I understand what we operate in terms of this town, but I can't say that they're not right when it comes to Max. And he better put up or shut up. And I tweeted something earlier that I saw that, like, you know, the Mets are kind of in a bind with these guys when it comes to how they're going to go about this trade deadline, because they're going to get less return if they continue to, you know, they're going to be a main reason why they are sellers. And because of the way those two pitchers are performing, they're most likely going to get less return, even with the Mets paying for it. So it's a very interesting season. You know, it, like one way or another, this is a very interesting, for better or worse, season in the Steve Cohen era, and the very green Steve Cohen era.
Well, you know, I know we have to move on to the bullpen, but I do want to make a comment on that, because personally, I thought Sunday's game was the biggest game of the season. They had won six in a row. They had lost one. Okay, fine. You don't want to get the losing ways going again. But more than that, every game is when you're seven behind, or at the time they were, I think they were 60 or 6.5 actually on Sunday, because they lost a half game in the standings by losing. I think there was a flip in terms of the team in the third wild card, so then they lost half a game. But anyway, every game is important. And when you have to make up ground, you can't have any throwaway games. So, okay, you win six in a row, you lose one, you have Scherzer on the mound. It was set up for you. They went out and lost the damn game, okay? So they could have picked up a half game because, again, of the flip of the third wild card team. They could have gone into the break with a 5-1 trip, six games out, but instead a 4-2 trip, seven games out. That might not sound huge, but when you're trying to make up ground in leaps and bounds and you have a lot of other teams in front of you, that was the game. It was, come on, Max, this is the last game before the All-Star break. Come on, everybody, because it's all hands on deck. Win the damn game, and they didn't do it. And, you know, Max, I think, I don't want to say he came up small, but it's just not what you're paying for. It's not what you had a right to expect from this guy. When he goes out there, you know, because now it's the Yankee game this year, the Braves game this year, going back to last season, the Braves and the Padres. Now, yes, I'm self-appointing this game as a very important game on Sunday. I hope you guys agree. And he came up. He didn't come up big enough, I'll say that. And it just, it's just so aggravating, right?
I absolutely agree with you there about that being an important game, because it's much better to go into the All-Star break winning 7 of 8 than it was to go in losing 2 in a row. And last year, right, whenever there was a game the Mets needed that Max was pitching, I would always make it a habit of tweeting, this is the game, these are games that we got Max Scherzer for. But I haven't done that this year because, frankly, I don't have the confidence in Max to get it done in games like this, because I think he's just become a normal pitcher. And I think, you know, you said it. He bombed against the Yankees and the Braves and the Padres, the good teams, which tells me that he may not have that. He may not be at that level that he once was anymore, and he may not even be at a good level. And right now, he's Aaron Harang right now to me, and that's a big problem.
And let's go to the bullpen because I want to keep this flowing. And I set this for an hour.
Yeah, but A-plus effort on the Aaron Harang reference, by the way. A-plus effort.
I cannot get enough of that. I can't get enough of Aaron Harang references. I loved it. So, all right. Now, all right, so I think we agree that the starting pitching, John, you were saying everybody's responsible, and I think that's true. Sam, you focus more on the big two. I think that's also a very fair point. Now, what happens when your starting pitching is floundering, we'll call it, that means you're taxing your bullpen a little bit more. We know this. Well, the Mets bullpen this year was not really in good shape to be taxed after the loss of Edwin Diaz because we know everybody had to move up a notch. You know, David Robertson is no longer the eighth inning guy. He's the ninth inning guy. Everybody moves up a notch, and sometimes these guys simply can't handle it. I'll say the name Drew Smith. I think I'm over that guy. I've had about enough of watching him come in. He has great stuff, but he just doesn't get people out. And he's now like your seventh inning guy. He's coming in leverage situations. It shows me two things. The starting rotation not doing as well, forcing more innings onto the bullpen. Everybody's being exposed. That's the first thing. And the second thing, and I'm going to go to you, John, first on this one. When Diaz went down, look, I know the Reds aren't going to say, oh, we feel so bad. We'll trade you Alexis Diaz. No, that's not what happens. But they needed to do something. They needed to call the White Sox and get Joe Kelly. They needed to do something to get a major league established arm in there or two, and they didn't do it. And it's like, okay, I think we all saw this coming. Because I asked about the rotation. I think we all saw not reinforcing the bullpen to be a problem. John, take it away in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think every aspect of the team we talk about from here on in, it's going to be tinged with that starting pitching. Yeah, because I think that everything that ails this team, and it's a lot of different aspects that are wrong with the team, but I think it all comes from that starting pitching. The bullpen was actually very good to start the year, with the starting pitching not going six innings in a lot of those games. They were good. But they couldn't keep that up. And like you said, they didn't go out and get anybody to fortify those middle innings in that bullpen. You know, maybe they tried, but it's not a great time to make trades because other teams now know, oh, they lost Diaz. Oh, they're going to be desperate. Now we make them overpay. So I think I wouldn't be surprised to find out that Billy Epler tried like hell to get guys to come in and reinforce the bullpen, but people were asking too much. It wouldn't surprise me. And I think the downturn of Drew Smith is a big problem for them because they depended on him, like you said, to pitch those high leverage innings, and they just had too many mop up guys on the
and,
team
and
as
Drew
it worked
Smith
out.
Was supposed to be. At this point right now, let's remember, though, that he shouldn't be this unreliable. He was supposed to take this next step one way or another, whether Diaz was here or not, and he has come up short. I think Billy Epler has as well, and so has Buck, the way he's avoided a lot of these people, you know, like because there's so many different examples and you know, why – really relitigate them right now when we haven't been able to really focus instant reaction on them on this podcast. But there's so many different ways you could have deployed what you had better. But back to Drew Smith, he needed to take the next step one way or another. Maybe he got shafted, with the whole sticky stuff situation, which seems to be this budding, you know, issue that Major League's going to need to deal with. But Drew Smith should have been taking the next step, and he hasn't.
Yeah, I'll totally agree. And don't forget Ottavino also. Ottavino was a guy, I think the new rules with the bigger bases and the stealing really affected him, just like the pitch clock rules. And not to make excuses, because these guys have all regressed. But there has been a theme with the pitch clock hurting these older guys, and it's been a theme with Ottavino, that guys are running all over him, and that's a big problem. It wasn't a big problem last year, but it's a big problem this year, and I think that's really affected Ottavino as well.
I think you might be right in that, John. And I'm going to throw this in about the bullpen, and Sam, I'll ask you to react first. But if you think about this, right, the Mets, okay, Diaz got hurt, but the Mets are, they were to win now, whether or not they were a favorite, who cares, but they're in a win now team. You think about the guys they're trotting out there. They're trotting out Dominic Leone, who was released by the Giants, and I think released by another team too, actually, when the Mets signed him. You have Leone out there. You have Drew Smith out there. Where I'm going with this is you've got Grant Hartwig, you know, who's actually pitching well, you know, and they've paraded guys like the lefty
Tommy
there,
Hunter,
Josh,
Steven Nagosic.
Muckenhern, who they traded. And, you know, it's just been a slew of, okay, look, we're going to get these guys off the scrap heap, you know, one of this, one of that. And, yes, Epler made the statement, and I'll go to you, Sam, as soon as I say this. Epler made the statement, and I thought it was damning when he said it, and this was before Diaz got hurt. He said he wanted a bullpen of guys with options that he can send down. And so it's like, well, what that tells me
that?
Is who has options? Yeah, he said that.
He absolutely said that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can Google that.
Who said that?
He said he wanted a bullpen of guys that he can option. I know. No.
Which is fine. if you're rotating one spot in the rotation, but they've been rotating three spots in the rotation in the bullpen.
I mean,
as it turns out,
to have an issue. Steve Cohen should have an issue with him saying, like, I have never seen something in person, physically, with my own eyes, of Billy Epler being that inept at public relations. Steve Cohen should be, somebody should tell Steve Cohen, like, you shouldn't be talking about that out loud in public with two reporters.
He said that he wanted guys with options, and so at least some guys with options. And so what that tells you is he wants guys who have options, which means they're not major. You know, they haven't gotten past their option years. They're not. So that told me right away. It's like, oh my God, you're basically building a bullpen of scrap parts. It didn't just happen. That was your plan. And look what happened to that plan. So my point is, when we talk about are we surprised by 42 and 48 and all of that, okay, yeah, starting pitching, you had a right to expect better, absolutely. The bullpen, yeah, Diaz, everybody had to go up a notch, sure. But at the same time, the bullpen was intentionally built to a degree on spare parts. And why are we surprised this is happening? Sam, take that. Comment on that.
Well, I think that there's many things wrong with this team. However, when you look at a lot of the games that the Mets have been able to win, the fact that they've lost the most for a team that have scored within games that they score more than six runs says enough about the bullpen itself, doesn't matter about the starting rotation. Because once the starting rotation has given up those runs, the bullpen in those games is supposed to be able to make sure you win those games. So that's the bottom line, is that, like, this is where, like, this is what happens with bad teams, is that once you figure one thing out, and the offense has been pretty solid, but every time the offense, the offense has no wiggle room. You know, they haven't come through at certain points when the bullpen blows it as well. However, the offense has come through a lot more than the bullpen has. And you look at some of these games, you know, look at a game, and here's the thing, Rich. And I'll go to this, and I'll ask you to go back and forth, if you will, because we haven't talked about this in person. I think we talked about it on Twitter, the game where Carlos Carrasco got taken out after four innings, and the Mets ended up blowing a 7-3 lead, I believe it was, or a 6-3 lead, or whatever, a 6-2, whatever it ended up being. They lost 7-6. I think that was it. So that one inning, regardless of the argument that he can't go through and order a third time, the fact that the starting pitchers haven't been able to go into later innings has also depleted the bullpen. However, there was Buck with a choice to allow at 76 pitches one of his veteran pitchers to do what his job should be. And now you look at what happened. Carlos Carrasco pitched eight innings. Kodai Senga pitched eight innings during that run. before the All-Star break. Like, that's, you know, I have to think that that's partially, even though they were clearly pitching a lot better in those games, that has to partially be Buck learning his lesson in some fashion. But like, with that game, Rich, you see where we're coming from, the way that that decision in the fifth inning to take Carlos Carrasco out screwed that eighth inning up, because who knows how it plays out if he has Carlos Carrasco for one more inning. Maybe he sucks, and maybe we don't have a 4-2 lead after that. But we were in a better position with that starting pitcher to win that game at that point with 76 pitches and not messing up the bullpen. So there, it's this is what happens with a 42-48 team, right? By all means, go ahead, Rich.
Well, your logic is crisp if it's anybody but Carrasco or anybody like Carrasco. I mean, to me, it's like I have no faith in Carrasco at all. Like, not even being hyperbole, if he gets through the batting order one time, I'm getting him out of there. I don't trust him at all. I don't care how well he's throwing the ball. I mean, I'd rather have the ghost of Jerry Kuzman on the mound than Carlos Carrasco. So, but that's me. So John, take
Kuzman
it on the bullpen.
Didn't die, though, right? Kuzman didn't die, though, right?
No, I mean, the ghost of him as a pitcher, like not as a human. So I guess most pitchers are human, at least they all are, right? Anyway, so John, take that away on the bullpen intentionally built with spare parts. Do you think that was a mistake from the beginning? And just other comments on the bullpen.
I certainly think that hurt them. Whether it was a mistake or not, you know, I don't know what was attempted, what was tried. But I like I said before, I think you can have. I think it's common for teams to go with guys that have options so that you can have some flexibility. I think it's a loophole that they might need to change at some point. But when you have three spots in that bullpen that are interchangeable, when you have three mop-up guys, and Leon's actually hasn't pitched badly. He's had a couple of blow-up games, but he hasn't pitched that badly. But he was never meant to be an important part of that pen. He was meant to be a stopgap. And I guess the question is, a stopgap for what? They went and got Trevor Gott. That's somebody that can handle innings, important innings for the team. I think eventually, I think he is a talent, and I think Steve Cohen's money was the factor that enabled getting him, and I think they're going to need to do that more as the season goes along. But you can't have three spots in those soft middle innings, the fifth, sixth, fourth, where you have guys that you are optioning up and down. You have to have guys that you can, a couple of more guys that you can trust. And whether it was a mistake to go with that, well, I think they thought that Drew Smith, like Sam said, was going to take that next step. And the fact that he hasn't, that he regressed, has really hurt this team. And I think the fact that Ottavino can't pitch anymore with runners on base, I think that's hurt this team. So now you're talking about you have one guy that you totally trust in that pen, in Robertson. Maybe if Diaz didn't get hurt, it would still be a problem because now you've got two guys you can trust, but that's, you need more than two guys. So, I do think that it's an issue. I think they're going to have to remake this bullpen and get another couple of guys like Gott who can contribute to the bullpen, not just this year, but next year as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, look, if it's the last guy in the bullpen, I understand the concept, right? You have a game where your starting pitcher blows up early. You bring some guy out of the bullpen. He gives you the three innings. And like Gary always jokes about, he gets your warnings being sent down, and you have another guy who can come up. And of course you do that. Maybe with one, maybe with two guys in the bullpen where they could be sent down. You have other guys of similar ilk who could be brought up. But when the bullpen is built on retreads and spare parts and guys who have failed and unproven guys, other than Robertson, and we'll say Ottavino too, because Ottavino, you had a right to expect better than you're getting. To me, it's kind of a curious philosophy on a team that expects to win this year. I think I made the analogy of, you know, it's like you buy this beautiful car, everything's great, it's great technology, and the car's great, but you put a hood from the scrap heap on it, you know, and it's just like, what are you doing? You bought this $50,000 car, you forgot to put a hood on it, so you go to the scrap heap, you throw one on that doesn't match the paint. And it's just like, that's kind of what they did with this bullpen, at least in my opinion. All right, so let's move to the offense, because I want to save the last 15 minutes to talk about buyer-sellers. So with regard to the offense, now, we can comment on that in general, but I want to ask you guys a question. So we haven't been on, at least I haven't been on since this happened. John, I'll start with you. The Daniel Vogelbach mental break, the time he took away to reset himself. I find that curious, and I'll ask you to comment on it if you wish. It was the same time Drew Smith was suspended. So they were essentially choosing to play with 24 players, which makes me want to pound my head against the wall. It's like, why are you going into battle with other teams down two players by choice? Like, Drew Smith, okay, that wasn't a choice. But with Vogelbach, we have him on the team, but he's not going to play, but we'll just play down because that's okay. And the other thing I wanted to say is, if you're going to do something like that, and I think he had like 8 days in a row where he didn't get in the lineup, it didn't play at all. If you're going to do something like that, why would you – it's like when he corrects himself, if it works, what are you expecting to get? This is a guy that has been DFA'd 3 times, a guy who in a full season you could probably expect 20 to 25 home runs, probably a 215, 220 batting average, and maybe some walks, but those walks don't have the value of a typical walk because he can't run when he's on base. So if we're choosing to play down – And resting somebody because you think there's this incredibly high upside that you're going to get after you play down guys and this guy comes back, okay. You know, maybe if it was like a David Wright or something like that. This is Vogelbach you chose to play down for. What in the world are you doing? I mean, this is a pound – maybe I'm overreacting, but this is a pound my head against the wall moment. John, am I crazy? Take it from there.
I don't think you're crazy. But I look at it from a different angle because I think the Vogelbach roster spot has been an issue for them all year. I think that the Mets' plan has always been to get his value up where they could trade him for another need from the team. I think what they were thinking, and this is just me guessing, is that, okay, we're going to play him. We're going to get him, we're going to get his value up, and then we're going to do what we did last year when we traded Colin Holderman for him. We're going to do it in reverse. And now we'll be the ones that'll sell him for a major league piece in the bullpen. Because basically Vogelbach is a redundancy with a few players that they have. I think he's a redundancy with Vientos. And I think it was part of the reason why Vientos was playing sporadically, and I think Vientos should have been playing more, if not regularly, if not every day, then definitely against more righties than lefties. I think they made a mistake trying to make Vientos into a lefty masher instead of doing what he did best, which was hit righties. Now he really didn't hit either arm. You know, maybe with more consistent playing time, he does. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But I think the Vogelbach thing, I think it hurt Vientos a little bit, but it blew up in their faces because he just didn't do anything to start the season. I don't think that they were propping him up to be an important part of this team. I think the goal has always been to find a taker for him. But now you can't do that. Even now that he's hitting well, you know, maybe you can get a little something for him to a team that needs a spare piece. I think that was always the goal, but I don't think they're going to get anybody back for him like we gave Colin Holderman away to get him. And I do think that that was a big problem. I think they did all that they could to try to save him so that they could eventually get a return for him so that they wouldn't just cut him indiscriminately and get nothing for him.
I do think his popularity in the clubhouse, his friendship with some of the main guys might have been a little bit of a factor in that. But I think that's always been – I think the plan has always been, hey, we got too many guys that are all or nothing like Vogelbach. We need to make room for some of these guys like Vientos. But they never were able to do it because Vogelbach didn't hold up his end of the bargain. That's my theory on that.
Okay, fair enough. How about the offense in general? Are you pleased with it? Are there certain things that you like, certain things you don't like? What do you think about the offense in the first half?
They've been so inconsistent. They've been, you know, they've had a lot of games where they've scored a lot of runs and that they look like they have, and that they look like they're there. I think Francisco Lindor, since the birth of his child, I think he's his second child. I think he's relaxed. And since then, you look at his numbers; they're off the charts. I think the issue with the Mets offense is just its approach. It definitely changed from 2022. To 2023. They took a lot of pitches. They wore down pitchers. They didn't swing. They didn't ambush guys as much last year as they're doing this year. You look at a guy like Starling Marte. His approach right now at the plate is awful. He swings at everything. He's too aggressive. I think Alonso the same way. And it tells me that, well, two things. Number one, perhaps promoting Eric Chavez to bench coach did a little something, changed something with the approach of this team. But I also think they're pressing. And it goes back to the starting pitching. When you're at home and you're starting every game down 1-0, down 2-0, down 3-0, all right, we got to press now. Now we got to get those runs back. And I think they're trying to get those runs back on one swing with nobody on base, down 3 runs. I think they gripped the bats. I think they're gripping the bats too tight. I think you see it in guys like Alonso and Marte and Jeff McNeil. And then to an extent, Brandon Nimmo, when he goes through his weak stretches where he gets one hit in 20 at-bats, and then he rides himself and he's back on the horse. But I think there's more than a few guys, their main guys, that are doing that. And, again, it's part of the regression that you see from year to year with these guys. And they're not putting up bad numbers as a whole as an offense. They're putting up halfway decent numbers. I think you have a handful of games where they're scoring 7-8 runs that are kind of panning that. But in big situations, just like it was before 2022, they're not getting it done. And I think they're pressing. I think they're too tense up there. And the question is, can they be fixed? Can you sit guys down and say, look, you got to and work on pitch selection and work on just taking more pitches and playing situational baseball more. These guys are swinging at everything in every inning and every count, and it's been a problem. So I do think that the offense, while it's been good, it's been very inconsistent, and I think the approach has been way off. If you look at an example, look at when Javi Baez was here, and he was swinging at all those sliders on the outside. And then for about a month and a half, about 6 weeks, it clicked with him. He stopped doing it, and he had a really good run as a Met. I think a lot of these guys can take that as a cue and say, all right, we need to change our – if Javi Baez, who swings at everything, can change his approach for 6 weeks, we sure as heck can.
I completely agree. You know, that I think the approach, you're right. The approach seems off. I think they are pressing. I think they feel the expectations, and that leads to bad at-bats. I think you nailed it, John. Sam, offense, what do you got for me? If you want to mention Vogelbach, that's fine too.
Oh, I will. Let's go let's do a 3-checkmark approach to this offense here. Number one, think about what you said, that he's still on the team because of his connection to the clubhouse. That should, in my head, mean a lot, but it, at the same time, doesn't, number one. Number two, Well, actually, I guess the Vogelbach thing might have its separate check marks. Number two, I'd love to see what Pete's average has been since Vogelbach has been batting behind him for almost a year. I would love to see exactly, just specifically the average, where that is, regardless of the power numbers or the RBI numbers. Although I am one to argue for the power and RBI numbers and run scoring numbers before Lindor's average usually comes around as we approach the middle to late part of the season. So that was the number 1-2 with the Vogelbach side of things. Number two, the Mets have been behind in the first inning, whatever the number is, but they've been outscored by, which is also completely reversed from last season. And I think a lot of that, if you look at it, is the starting pitching setting them up on the road poorly. I'm sorry, setting them up at home poorly, actually, now that I say it out loud. That could lead to a lot of pressing. I guess this was basically my first two had to do with Vogelbach, and the last one had to do with that. But basically that's my check mark when I think about what really is glaringly wrong about this offense. And unfortunately, Vogelbach comes up twice. But the other thing that comes up is the position the starting pitching has been putting them into, where, especially at home, of course you're going to press.
Very fair. And, you know, and I when people say you're picking on Vogelbach, I don't think anybody's picking on the guy. I think it's just a question of he's the DH on the team. The DH is expected to be a productive hitter, and he's simply not. And the fact that he's, and I think we all have our axe to grind because we feel like he's taking at-bats away from younger guys, which, you know, could be true. And, John, I hope you're right. I hope they're trying to establish some baseline of value so they could get a mid-level prospect for him at some point, and then they could bring up, you know, insert name of player, whether it's Mauricio or whether it's
And I guess let me just say, though, that like, even if that's the strategy, is it really – should that really be the strategy at the detriment of the current product? I love Vogelbach. I really do, and I wish that he would be better than he is, and I wish that he would be a bigger part of this than just putting his arms up when other people do things on the bench. You know, like, I like the guy, and I understand his value and why people like him and why – you know, he has many friends around the entire game. However, Mauricio is still down there. What are we doing? Like, if you're talking about what needs to work right now, and maybe this is the long-term plan that Steve Cohen was talking about outside of getting David Stearns. And I'm not sure how much we've discussed the fact that Steve had to have his, like, first stress press conference in his entire tenure, whether we've talked about that or not, but you know, it's 3 out of 5. He said 3 to 5 years, right? 3 to 5 years. Here we are. Of course, this is what's happening.
And Steve Cohen is learning along the way too. You know, Cohen is learning. I think he could take that statement back, he would have. I think if he could take the dalliance with Carlos Correa back, I think he would have. At least he had the good sense to listen to his people when that fell apart, when Correa fell apart. So he's learning just like everybody else is learning.
Absolutely. All right, guys. So we have about 15 minutes left. I want to do one thing really quick, so don't think about it. Just give me a name for this one. Sam, I'll go to you first. Biggest positive surprise in the first half for the Mets is who? No explanation, just give me a name.
Alvarez. Here
All
we
right,
are.
John.
The future is here.
He took my name. It's Alvarez too. And not just because he's been good, but because he's been as good as he is in terms of they're mentioning him in the same breath as Johnny Bench at this point.
I agree with Alvarez. I think he's developed offensively and defensively at a very rapid pace. Okay. Biggest disappointment first half. Sam, you first.
Marte.
Interesting. John.
Peterson.
Very interesting. I don't disagree with either. I'm going to go with Scherzer, and I know with 8 wins, you know, he's 8-3, I believe. That's hard to say, but again, for all the reasons we talked about, the big spots, his name just seems to come up in those games, and he just doesn't seem to deliver. But anyway, but you guys, Marte's a great choice. Peterson, because he's a swing guy.
Can I just say about Marte?
In about 30 seconds,
there was that. Yeah, there was that one game where he just swung at everything. I think it was against the Giants. And he did seem to, at least right away, change his approach. So that gives me a little bit of hope, even though he's been a big disappointment.
Well, that woman slamming on the dugout saying, don't swing at everything, when he came up and he swung at 3 pitches out of strike zone, that went viral, as it should. So, okay. So, gentlemen, we have a little more than – we have 14 minutes left, and I want to ask you a question and have you go with it. And, you know – and we'll make this our final topic for today. And by the way, you're listening to the Mets Team Podcast, and thank you for doing so. John, I'll start with you. The Mets, will they be buyers or sellers, or is it TBD at the deadline? And obviously your answer will depend upon how you feel they're going to do coming out of the gate. So basically what I'm asking you is, will they end up being buyers or sellers at the deadline, and why do you think that will be the case? So, John, can you take it from there?
My answer is yes, or at least that's what I think they should do, because I don't think it should really matter what they do. I mean, if they come out of the gate guns a-blazing and win 13 out of 15 or something crazy like that, then, yeah, obviously they're going to be buyers. But it really should be a hybrid approach, especially since we know they're not going to win 13 out of 15 coming out of the gate. I think if you can sell guys, and, you know, and Sam said it, the problem is you're not going to, or maybe you said it, Rich, you're not going to get a big return on guys like Scherzer and Verlander. You're just not, even if you take on a lot of that money. It's not going to happen. And they still want to compete in 2024. So, but I do think that they should obviously, you know, think about guys like Tommy Pham, who you can get a little bit of return from, and he wasn't, you know, he's not signed past this year either. But I think you can do a hybrid approach where I think the guy you can get something back for is Marte, honestly. I think if somebody needs a bat, you can get a good return on Marte because you've got to cover 2 years of salary. I think Cohen can entice a team to cover 2 years of salary to take Marte, and by covering 2 years and basically giving them Marte for no money, but get good prospects back. I think if you have the opportunity with a guy like that, I think you have to take it. And because there's not a lot of other guys that you're going to get big returns from, not Martana, not Tommy Pham, not guys like that. But I do think if they have the opportunity to buy and make more trades like Trevor got, and maybe more on the pitching side, if they have opportunities to get guys that are under contract just for 2024, where you make a trade like Trevor got, where you get that guy for nothing, but you take on an onerous contract and then eat it. I mean, they cut Chris Flexen so fast, you thought that he was going to go join the Lakers for a playoff run. That's what it felt like. I think if they go, it took you a while. It's like a joke grenade. You pull the pin and then you get it. But if you have an opportunity to get guys like that from teams that have no interest in paying their contracts and want to save money, think about a guy like Herman Marquez from the Rockies. Think about maybe a guy like Liam Hendricks from the White Sox, or Jordan Lyles from the Royals. Guys like that who you can acquire for just cash and not give up so much for, they can contribute in 2024. And I think if you have opportunities to do that while getting rid of while trading away some of the hitters, then you can kind of sell, but then you can reload for 2024. And then those kind of contracts that expire in 2024, they can all go off the books. Remember, a lot of money is coming off the books after 2024.
And who's a free agent in for 2025? That would be Juan Soto. I still say Soto has been, and Soto has, and Soto still is the target for this team for that next monster contract. But there are ways that they can compete in 2024 where you can get some prospects and then acquire some players for not such good prospects, because that's been the goal of this team. Listen, if this was the Wilpons, then three out of the four of Beatty, Alvarez, Vientos, and Mauricio would probably be gone already. This regime is keeping the big name prospects, and they're going to try to acquire more. They got a couple of guys. And let me just say this, too, along with the trade of Escobar to the Angels. Got two good guys back because Cohen paid the freight on Escobar. All these owners putting up a big stink about, they don't like Cohen. They don't like the way he spends. Yeah, they don't like the way he spends until he spends money to help you. So Artie Moreno was more than happy to greenlight a trade to help the Mets unload Escobar, and it'll be the same with Jerry Reinsdorf. If they want to go get Liam Hendricks, Jerry Reinsdorf makes all this stink, voting against Cohen being the manager. But you know what? If Reinsdorf has a chance to save some money by Cohen taking a contract for him for this year or next year, he'll do it too. So all these complaints from these other owners ring hollow. All right, that's a side point. But I think to answer your question, yeah, they should be buyers and they should be sellers in the right situation to position this team for another run at 2024 while keeping them flexible for 2025 and beyond to get a guy like Juan Soto.
Very well thought out, thorough answer. Okay, Sam, where are you with the buyer-seller thing?
Ooh. Well, other than saying I'm exactly where Metrodamus is, as he prophesizes what will happen, a lot of times I have been very much on the, all right, let's just, nuke bomb this thing and sell, sell, sell. Whatever that means, other than the core that you should build upon, including Pete Alonso, that you have yet to sign long term. I look at everything they have, and I consider the fact that they don't have enough pitching prospects. They haven't called up some of these guys, which would probably happen if you trade somebody like Tommy Pham, as much as I've had fun with him hitting so well for us. I think that everything helps everything if you are a seller, for sure. And, again, it goes to the weird dichotomy of where the Mets are, that the two pitchers at the top of their, the 40-year-old pitchers are the ones that hold the fate of the Mets in their hands. And even if you don't get a good return, if you're paying a good portion of it, you're probably going to get a better one way or another. So, you look back at 2019, even though we didn't make the playoffs, that is a perfect example of what can come. And everybody, when they made the Marcus Stroman trade, thought it was crazy that they were quote-unquote buyers. But there the Mets were, raking off like 16 out of 17 right after that. So is this a better team to be able to do what the 2019 team did? I don't know. That's kind of another question for another podcast.
Well, 2019 is a good analogy, though, because they were dead and buried. They were 11 games under 500. I think they hit 11 games under 500 when they lost the first game on the Friday night after the All-Star break. And they won the next two in Miami. Then they went on that run. We had the Michael Conforto shirt off game in there, a lot of thrilling wins in August, especially. And they could do that. But, John, going back to your point about being buyers and sellers, that's probably the best philosophy where, you take something you're not going to use, like a Tommy Pham. You're probably not going to bring Tommy Pham back. Not there's anything wrong with Tommy Pham. It's probably not the plan. And I would like to see them maintain Robertson, but at the same time, if you're going to buy and sell, that's the guy you could sell and get something back for, or maybe you package, some couple of guys together that you don't have in your plan for next year and bring back something you could use next year. That's whether it's major league talent now or somebody who might be almost major league ready, like a pitcher in somebody's system. That's probably the most logical way to go when you're the Mets, because you don't want to go through a massive rebuild. That's not what Steve Cohen is here for. I don't think it's wise to sell off Scherzer and Verlander. Sure, you could buy out the contract, but that's a ton of money. And Cohen said in his presser, he said he's not going to keep losing money bigger than a bread box, right? So he's not going to keep doing this. He's not going to, you know, pay $80 million to get rid of those two guys. And then, by the way, you know, who would pitch next year? Who would pitch? Jose Buto? I mean, come on. They don't have the prospects. So your best bet is probably to hold those two guys, trade other more, because who might want them anyway? You know, trade other guys who have expiring contracts who don't fit into the plan. Try to get something back you can use next year. I think that makes sense. So, guys, we're down to a little less than 4 minutes to go in the podcast. It's been a lot of fun talking Mets baseball. I'm going to ask you one more question, though. So we talk about buying and selling and all of that. Realistically, we'll start with you, Sam. Are the Mets going to make a run? Well, we won't even talk playoffs yet. Are the Mets going to make a run to a point where we're all engaged, or will this be 2017 all over again where it's just playing out the string?
Realistically, no.
No run.
Hopefully, yeah.
John, where are you?
I think again.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, good. There you go.
Yeah, I think I'm with Sam. I don't think real. You know, they could kind of get our hopes up a little bit, but I don't think they're going to go on a 2019 run. I think the starting pitching is just way too iffy for that to happen. Now, if the starting pitching rights itself, then perhaps they could go on a run if there's a good amount of belief on the rest of the team. But realistically, I think the schedule is way too tough. They got a lot of games against winning teams, and they have. I still think they have 9 or maybe 12 games against the Braves coming up. It's going to be really tough, and I think the Mets should operate with the thinking that they're not going to do it, that they should think about 2024 and beyond.
Well, we'll see. I think they may give us a little – I'm not saying they will qualify for the last wild card. I think they may get close enough to keep us interested. I really think that the first 2 weeks out of the gate – are going to be the whole story, because you have the Dodgers, then you have the White Sox, and right there, you know, 6 games at home, you have those games. And I forget where they go after they play the Red Sox after the White Sox up in Boston. Then they have 2 with the Yankees.
And
then
may I just say before we go anywhere else, like, all those teams are also struggling that you just said, but look what just happened against the Padres. So it's not just winning teams that they're going to be taking on. It's other struggling teams, and the Mets need to, you know, just put up or shut up, you know, which they didn't do against the Padres.
That's it. That's it right there. Because let's just say of the first 15 games out of the chute, if they can go 10-5, that's not an unreasonable ask. Now you're 2 games under 500. You're probably 4 out of the wild card at that point. You might have a shot. Maybe you add sparingly a few pieces. But anyway, guys, we are down to a minute, and I don't want to get cut off here. John from John Metrodamus on Twitter, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Metsian podcast. If you have a final word for us tonight.
My final word is perspective. This is a new regime. They've shown that they're going to do things the right way, even if it takes longer than they expected. I think it's wise to keep perspective that we are in a new timeline, that old timeline is broken and gone forever. Perspective.
Sam, your last word.
Long-term plan. Change the narrative. That's all. Let's go, Mets.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, everybody who has listened to the Metsian podcast. Once again, thank you to my co-host in podcasting, Mr. Sam Maxwell, and John from Metrodamus. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, you are always welcome here. Folks, we have 72 games left. Can the Mets get off the deck? We will find out. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night, and let's go, Mets.
Let's go, Mets.